Tasvinavani Tamastuma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so now we've established that the within the fruitive, then I mean within the conditional atheistic, then you're going to have, well, it's actually one, I guess, with faith, is that you have the karmi and jnanis, and then you have that those who just are speculative and don't really base it on shastra or anything, or any other kind of element that you have faith in. Okay, so those who follow the karmakanda, once again, they are of two types, namely that of selfish material bliss and that of unselfish material bliss. Okay. Followers of selfish material bliss conclude that when there is no existence of God, soul, worlds beyond death and the consequence of one's activities, then they voluptuously engage themselves in the sensual pleasures by being somewhat cautious against the immediate consequences. There's no use in unnecessarily wasting the time in religious activities. This kind of belief has been prevailing in the human society from time immemorial, due to the defects of unholy company and evil activities. Doctrines of this type have never seemed to become socially oriented. According to its origin in different countries, it has been only produced and written by respective persons. Among the innumerable subscribers of this doctrine, Charvak Pandit of India, atheistic Yang Chu of China, atheistic Leucippus of Greece, Sardanapalus of Middle Asia and Lucretius of Rome are the prominent persons. Von Holbach says that the religion which provides increased individual happiness should be honored. Religion is said to be a device of making oneself happy by subscribing to the happiness of others. So you get within those who are fruitive, the selfish is you're just after your own gain, so you do whatever is good for yourself. Sounds good. Persons, they themselves practice it. Some of the successful ones may write about it, but that's basically as far as it gets, because it doesn't function as a social unit. Because for a relationship to be there, there must be the element of selflessness, right? Otherwise, how do you interact with another person? So the other thing, it sounds good, you know, it may work here or there on a very superficial platform, but it's very limited in its social, you know, development here. Does that make some sense? Like that. So it's kind of limited like that. So now he's quoting here this Holbach, von Holbach, that or Bach, probably, that religion is said to be something of making yourself happy through seeing that others are happy. Right? So that would then generate the unselfish. The modern-day advocates of materialistic bliss have compiled their doctrines after a type of unselfish materialistic bliss in view of gaining the faith of the masses. Right? Because if you just say, means everybody, not everybody, but many will agree that just doing it for yourself is not very good. So therefore it'll be packaged as selfless. Does that make sense? Because then others will get involved, right? So there's more chance of you, if you're on your own trying to get, you may get, you may not get, but if you're working with others, there's more of a chance you'll get something. Does that make sense? So it would have a tendency to be projected more in that way. You're into something, you get more people into it, there's more opportunities, you feel better, you feel more secure. Atheistic doctrine of karma, Karmavad, of India is perhaps the most oldest of these. The Mimamsakas, who are the advocates of this Karmavad, have vitiated the meanings of the self-revealed Vedas in favor of their doctrine and have used their erudition in establishing something called Apurva in the place of God by using various aphorisms like love it, I never transliterate. The natives are restless. Okay, what do we have here? I think Chaidana Lakshmi. Chaidan Lakshmi. Okay, Diana Lakshmi. Okay. A Greek scholar named Democritus has established the basis of this doctrine in his country. Okay, so You're saying that there's some you acknowledge that there's something supreme, but basically it's just a order supplier for yourself, right? Krishna's making that point that God, when he's professing karma mimamsa to Nandavala, is that you perform your duties, then the demigods can reciprocate. You do good work, you get good results. You do bad work, you get bad results. Otherwise, they're not giving you anything. Right? So, because you're doing the work, they're reciprocating. Therefore, you know, the main thing is happening here. They're only order suppliers. Does that make some sense? So they're not actually... So that supreme is just something beyond Apurva here, something very special, something wonderful, like that, you know, because, you know, you got to give them some credit. They aren't providing everything. Right? But that's about as much as it gets. So it's basically just material. Right? A Greek scholar named Democritus has established the basis of this doctrine in his country. I guess that's sort of the basis of democracy, right? Is that everybody kind of works together to, you know, for a common good, right? And there may be some trust in God, but that's about as far as it goes, right? That makes sense. Okay. He says that the matter and the void are eternal. Union of matter with the void results in creation, and the separation of matter in destruction. Materials are distinguished from each other due to the differences in quantity. There is no distinction in the class of materials. Knowledge is nothing but a type of feeling. Feeling generated by the union of internal and external objects. Okay. So he's just taking this internal and external and the void in that, and when they interact, then something is happening. So he's working basing on these experiences and this and that. So you see that there's the element of this, but there's also the impersonal aspect is there. Right? So he's just, given some philosophy. As per his doctrine, Adam is the basis of all matter. The Vaisheshika system of philosophy preached by Kannada of our country accepts the eternal distinction of classification of the atoms, and this is in some way different from the atomic theory of Democritus. Okay. Yeah, so he makes no distinction here. I guess that's the democratic element. There's no distinction. Everything's equal. According to the Vaisheshika doctrine, soul and the supreme soul have been accepted as eternal. Plato and Aristotle of Greece also have not accepted the supreme alone as the eternal principle and the only source of the entire universe. In this way, the defects of the philosophy of Kannada are also seen in the doctrines of these scholars. Gassendi has accepted the theory of atoms and concluded that God is the creator of atoms. Diderot and Lemaître of France have preached the unselfish material bliss. By attaining gradual degrees of maturity, the doctrine of unselfish material bliss has attained its perfection in the writings of the philosopher named Comte of France. Life period of Comte was 1795 to 1857. His enormous doctrine is called positivism. This is quite a fantastic name for his doctrine because except material aspects and phenomenal rules, nothing else is revealed by it. Right? Material aspects of phenomenal rules. Okay, nothing else is written. Okay, so he's saying it's a very great name he's given to his materialistic, you know, endeavor here. We do not have any other equipments for the collection of knowledge other than the sense organs. All the mental aspects are nothing but the attributes of the materials. This being the case, it is impossible to determine anything as the ultimate cause. Nothing can be understood about the beginning as well as the purpose of the world. No signs of any sentient principle are observed. Who is the creator of the universe? Right, so in other words, you only have the senses to work with. This is what they're dealing with. You only have the senses to work with. Then these senses, by working with them, then you will observe something in the world. Right, and what you observe is just the attributes of the things that you observe, and so it leaves it at that. So you're saying is there's nothing beyond this. You have the senses, the sense objects, and what you see there, or what you gain, or what you experience from that. Looks like we might be having a storm. The question comes is, will we be able to continue? Let's see, it might go away, but we might have to go away. Okay, you understand what they're dealing with? So they don't see anything beyond. They don't see any higher intelligence. They don't see anything because they're only using the senses, and you can't get beyond that with that. Therefore, you know, his positive, he's making the point, his positive. Positivism. Lost in blowing of the wind. His positivism is like, you know, he's saying it's a very big name for something that is so simple, right? It's obvious that the senses, seeing the sense objects, the attributes that are there are contributed to them, but where did that come from? That they can't explain. They can't explain that there's a quality of it, so what you perceive is in pursuit of that quality, and that quality is God the Lord. I kind of think that maybe we're going to have to limit our continuation of this, because one never knows, and one can never become very, how you say? Peaceful, knowing that any second the whole place may explode. So now you have a few options. One, you can get up now and move very quickly in some other direction, hoping you'll get someplace before the rain does. Or, I guess it's every man for themselves. So, generally only in the Vedic study then you have to stop class, but here you don't know that if at any second something will happen, so what would be your preference? Maybe, but I can't guarantee that upstairs is going to be any more peaceful. Yes, but I'm just saying upstairs might be difficult because a full-on storm, then you always have to be careful of the windows, this, that. So I'm just worried that if it just does this, it won't be a problem. But if it goes more than this, then we have a bigger problem. And you? What's your suggestion? You don't have one. You're going with the positive or with the democratic viewpoint, the collective happiness. No. Continue. Okay. You can try. I'm just worried that you're going to have some problems. Okay, so thus being the case, there, it is impossible to determine anything about anything as the ultimate cause, because you're observing something. So is your observing it what's important? Was there something before? Why is it there in the first place? I'm seeing the car now. I'm interacting with someone else then made the car before that for some other purpose. But who knows what it... So everything's all interrelated, and so therefore you can't really tell where the cause is. So they don't worry about it. They just worry about what... Since you can't tell where the cause is, you just worry about what's happening now. Right? Nothing can be understood about the beginning as well as the purpose of the world, because each person has their own idea. That's, you know, this democratic element that has all these different kinds of things. Does this make sense? There's a progression here of all these things. All the mental aspects of thought should be arranged according to the mutual relation, result, similarity, and dissimilarity. Right? Means whatever it is between you and what you're observing, then you adjust everything according to that. What's there? What is the situation you're in? Who else is involved? Does that make sense? So in other words, you have an element of truth in that they're working with the present. You understand? That's what makes it work. But what they don't understand is that if you're only dealing with the present, not in the context of actually how that present is there, you know, in connection with the Lord and the whole creation, then that presentness, that mode of goodness becomes, even though you're working in the moment, then that aspect may be successful, but the other part of it is you're in ignorance. So actually the mind can't be satisfied. Right? Because even if you deal with the mundane, you know, nicely, in the moment, but if there's no some higher purpose, how will the mind be satisfied? So that's always going to be a problem then. So, you know, that's why then these persons, it comes up, they feel that you just have to be more expert at dealing with it in the moment, and because of that, then, how do you say, something may work nicely. But then the problem comes is that whatever you do, there's always going to be a difficulty, right? There's always going to be an anxiety that, you know, you're doing something nicely, but it doesn't necessarily go exactly the way you want. What's that over there? That bag over there? On the floor, right there, on the ground. Does this belong to anybody here? That's yours. So keep it over there, because in a storm, things tend to end up at Krishnagar. Not that it's a bad place, but you may not want to go there to pick up your bag. Okay. You understand is there has to be something that's right, otherwise how does it even function at all? But because it's only taking a portion of the aspect, one is that, of course, they're all atheistic because God's being left out of it. But the other aspect is that it's dealing in such a narrow range, right? You see, even the
Indian forms are much more broad and dynamic. You know, karma, mimamsa, and these things. So we'll get into this. We will get to the point of studying this. So these elements, when they're dealt with, then it's more complete than that is dealing with the Vedic philosophy. So it'll be broader ranged to the point where there can be a common culture. But these non-Vedic, then they have the tendency to be very, very narrow. Somebody's just thought of it on their own. Otherwise, how do they move forward with it? Does that make sense? Because it's not coming from anywhere. It's not coming from their religion. So they have to generate it themselves. So they're not going to have the facility that the great thinkers of the Vedic culture are having. You know, the whole means the whole culture itself. So God being complete, everything's connected to Him. Therefore, if you only take a portion of it, you know, based on Shastra, it will still be something significant, right? Though not complete. But these people are just by their observation, what they feel, what they've observed, by their own intelligence. That makes sense? So it's always going to be something less. It is not improper to attach any transcendental feelings to them. Or it's not proper to attach any transcendental feelings in them. Right? It means recollection of God should be known as the infancy of thought, the philosophical thoughts as the childhood, and the resultant thinking should be thought as the maturity of thought. Right? It means you might start with God in the beginning because it has some faith in that, but it's not real mature intelligence, right? Because then it's faith, and so you're not looking into it. But that mature thinking, then you analyze it all very nicely and everything. And then without all this so-called theism and all that, then you become to the matured state. You understand? So everything is just being dealt with, what's in the moment, what you see, and everything like that. So this idea of positivism, you look at it positively, that you deal with it nicely, you'll get the result you want, right? Does that make sense? Which in one sense is something true, in that the moment, if you deal with the moment, you get some benefit. But the point is the mind is much greater than just the moment. Right? That's the point of activity. But there still must be identity. There still must be goals. Does that make sense? So they have a little bit of an understanding of the properly dealing in Abhideya. But everything else, the sambandha, basically doesn't exist other than the sense of the sense object. It's so minute, right? And the Abhideya is just dealing in the moment with what's going on and adjusting according to the situation. And the result is you're supposed to be happy. Does this make sense?
All the activities should be conducted in compliance to the thoughts of right and wrong. Right? So, So all activities should be adjusted with what's right and wrong. But who establishes what's right and wrong? Right? So they will go by, there's some general things the society does that's quite strong, so someone in this will be comfortable to do that because there's a society in place. And in that society, the person will be comfortable, and he will be able to find his way. Does that make sense? So then he can go on pursuing all these other little things. If someone else is taking care of the law and order of the society, right? So it works for him, right? But so as long as everybody else is working on this element of, cooperative sense gratification, then this will work. But as soon as it breaks down, then it won't work as nicely, as smoothly. Does that make some sense? You can still apply it, but it's going to be a problem. So, therefore, if you're leaving, I say, the right and wrong, who's going to decide what's right and wrong? Because what he's missing out is the right and wrong in society that he can go smoothly with only dealing with what he's thinking of is established by religion. Therefore, people don't steal, don't bother their neighbor, this and that.
But for some people, right is getting what you want, and wrong is not getting what you want. Right? So, therefore, then, this is going to run into some problems here. Does that make sense? So the person is riding on the back of everybody else's adherence to a social norms, you know, based on God consciousness, and therefore then, does that make sense? Right? So it becomes much limited here. His doctrine also advises that all the human beings should carry on their life with unselfishness and in the help of others, right? Because that'll ensure that it'll go on. You want sense gratification, then you have to see that others are getting it also, because otherwise if only you're getting it, they'll be jealous, there'll be problems. But if you're seeing that everybody else in this cooperation, therefore then everybody's getting something. So it seems to be very nice, you know? It seems to be very nice. He says that human beings should cultivate the tendency by the feelings of the heart. Now here, cultivate the tendency by the feelings of the heart. But at the same time, he said, this concept of God is very childish because it's faith. So, but the faith is your feelings for something higher, like this. But here's your feelings in something at present. So it's faith that this is as affection, or this will make me happy, or all these different things. So it's the same thing. So all they're replacing, they're just taking God as material endeavor. You know what I'm saying? And throwing out God as a superior authority. So you're making your own self the authority. So materialism will always come back to that you yourself are your authority. Does that make sense? Is it clear why the Vedas make these between the, how you say, the... the wild and the less tame animals, local animals, then, you know, both were calling at the same time. You had the wild ones, and then you had the less, not so tame ones also. You understand? You understand? No? It means there's the ones that we would generally call birds and beasts, and then the ones that basically are birds and beasts, but we would tend to put them in the human category because of the number of that they walk on their hind legs, you know, instead of on all fours. But there's not necessarily a lot of difference like that. I mean, yeah, like that. I'm saying it says all these in a storm they go wild. So. For the sake of cultivating those tendencies, one should adopt an imaginative object, and an embodiment of female form must be worshipped. Right. So they're actually turning into a kind of shakta here. Right. So there's a feminine form, because the feminine form will create the kindness, the niceness, that interactiveness, the nourishing of relationships, all these different elements like that. So. You see the contradiction here. There's no God, right? You can't tell the beginning and end, but you are creating all this, right? Because it's just, in other words, you're the source of it. So it's basically a form of voidism, right? Is that I think of it, then it happens. I don't think of it, it doesn't happen. He's not saying it specifically, but it's basically, you can see the center is all about themselves. Does this make sense? Like that. Even if the object is unreal, it will help in the fulfillment of the tendencies. Right? You imagine the superior object. But so why not God? Right? Does that make sense? So they can't, coming back to it anyway. Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes the point that the human being can't function without religion. So you either follow what's established or you'll create your own. Right? So here he's throwing out what's established and then creating his own. But you can't function without. Just like you may not like the food your parents give you, but you're still going to have food. So you're going to, what you call food, eat that. It's not that you're getting rid of the concept of food. You just get rid of how others are thinking.
The earth is the supreme fetish. Land is the supreme medium.
and the human nature itself is the supreme being. A female idol with a baby in the hand should be worshipped in the morning, noon, and during evenings. Right? So he's even getting into ritual here. Like that. You know, they come from this cult, so they have to do it. One's own mother, wife, and daughter should be mentally worshipped with the thoughts pertaining to the triple periods of past, present, and future. One should not seek after any fruit of these observations. Right? So, yeah. In the country of England, a scholar named Mill has named this materialism as sentimentalism, right? The other guy called it positivism, but he's called it sentimentalism. And arrived at conclusions mostly similar to that of Comte, and subscribed to the doctrine of unselfish material happiness. A type of godless secularism has attracted the minds of the modern youth of England. Logicians like Mill, Lewis, Paine, Carlyle, Bentham, Combe, etc., are the initiators of the secularism. This also is divided into two types. Holyoke is the founder of one of its divisions, who has graciously accepted God to some extent. So kind. Right? The founder of the other division is Bradlaugh, who is totally an atheist. Right, so you have theistic a little bit more leaning towards theism and definitely not, you know. Does that make sense? In other words, they're dealing with the senses and the sense objects. You deal with them according to what's right and wrong. You know, I would expect he's saying you should choose right. You're going to, in dealing with this, you're going to adjust, it means according to right and wrong, and to time, place, and circumstance, you're going to deal with it, right, according to the feelings of the heart. Right? That's his essential point that he's making. So that's done because you don't know where the beginning, the end is, you don't have anything like this, you don't know its purpose, but at the same time as, you know, he develops his own deity, you know, some lady with a child worshipped at noon, so I guess you have your daughter, your mother, your wife, and your, you know, how you say, daughter, being the past, the present, and the future, like that. Does that have anything to do with Scrooge? Like that. I wonder if he was one of these guys. Right? Does that make sense? So your positivism, your sentimentalism, in any case, you're trying to work in such a way that everybody's happy, right? Because you're going to do the right thing, you know, properly according to, you know, social, you know, appropriateness, the time and place, you know, but and according to, you know, the good feelings of the heart because of your worship of your deity. Does this make sense? So you see is that it's nice, but it's extremely limited. Right, so much intelligence has gone into something so narrow. Right, it's something that the Shastra explains in just a few minutes. Right, it means you have right and wrong established by the Shastra. You have your duties to perform, you know, in connection with that, and you must apply them to time, place, and circumstance. Right, the Shastra, because it's Krishna's creation. Why is there good and bad? That you can't explain, because that immediately goes to there must be some authority. Otherwise, how do you decide what's right and wrong? Why would human society, basically, in general, all agree that certain things are right and certain things are wrong? Right? There's general human tendencies all over the planet. Does that make sense? In all societies and all cultures. So, and then, you know, there'll be some detail that's different in all those, but in general, they're quite similar. So how would that be? Why would there be such a universal order? This they can't understand. Does this make sense? Okay, so this is, you've taken this line, you know, basically to its limit, like that.
Is this the same type as pranamoya?
They're dealing on pranamoya. It will be a pranamoyic. In other words, they're dealing with life in general or life in specific, you know, trying to be nice and all that. But yeah, you could say it would be an aspect of that. Because all consciousness has to, material consciousness would have to fit into these four. You know? Does that make sense? It would have to fit into there. So this would fit into that area.
But we see it's an interesting kind of like, it's between, it's the senses and the sense objects are the basis. So it's actually, it's, you could say, better would be, you would say it is anamoy with pranamoy leanings. Because it's based on the senses and the sense objects, that's the central point. You know, and your own feelings and all those different things. And time, place, and circumstance to the sense and the sense object. Then you're trying to do good for others and be involved with others, encourage nice cooperation with others. But the actual place of interaction, the place of happening is the senses and the sense objects. And the deity is, you know, the feminine, the earth, you know, land, the earth, you know, the different place. In other words, you have the earth is what everything is about. You have the place where you're going to perform the activity, like that, but it's all about what you do. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like it's a, yeah, it would be an anamoy. You know, that's leaning a little bit, you know, that it's a cooperative anamoy. Does that make sense?
So the cooperation is all about to enhance one's own sense?
Yes, basically. It's not that you're trying to enhance others. Specifically, like that. Let's see here, as he's saying. Carry on the life in unselfishness and the help of others. And also he's saying you should not try to seek any fruit from these observations. So you see it's a real mix of different things. So there's also the element of naishkarmya there. But that naishkarmya is only on the intellectual platform. It's not on the sensual platform. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's when you study the six philosophies, the idea is that from that you'll understand all the aspects of each. Then any other philosophy you can fit into those six. Not meaning that it will exactly fit into one category, but it will fit into all the categories, into elements from any of them. So they come up with their own unique mix. So someone will be based predominantly in Jaimini, but they'll also have something from this one that are based in, you know, in Vaisheshika, but only have part of it. They don't have as broad as that, and then they'll have some other parts from something else. Does that make sense? So all these different aspects they'll have. So that's why it's important to go. Does that make sense? You know, the idea was this would have been studied after, but somehow or another, all these years discussing about, how you say, a particular book we should be using now, and everybody's nodding their head, and when the day comes to use it, we don't have the book. Believe it or not, I always thought we had the book, but we don't have the book. So, fortunately, Sihotamar's has written stuff, but it's written in, you know, some kind of computer language that to do one document takes 3 hours of work to correct. So probably will take another week before we have that material. Then we'll go back to where we're supposed to be. That makes sense. Okay. In spite of the minor differences between the doctrines of selfish material bliss and non-selfish material bliss, both of them are materialism. Minor differences, because the difference, they're both focused on themselves. But the one is whether they cooperate with others or whether they don't. That's the minor point. Because for them, why we say it's a minor point is because the main point of the whole thing is your own enjoyment, your own happiness. Though, if you cooperate with others in that, it'll create more of an atmosphere of enjoyment. Therefore, naturally, you'll be happier and it'll be easier for you to go ahead if everybody is satisfied and moving forward. Does that make sense? So that's probably why he's taking it as positive for the other sentimental, right? If all these previously mentioned doctrines are thoroughly reviewed, the futility of the materialistic doctrines become exposed. The purely transcendental reasoning at once discards these baseless doctrines at the first sight as insignificant ones. Even an unbiased phenomenal logic finds these doctrines to be erroneous and it discards them. The following enumerations will reveal the facts. Right, so you're basically saying
any kind of logic will get rid of them. And here especially the transcendental reasoning at once just sees there's no connection to Krishna here. So how can it function? You know what I'm saying? Because we say what they say, but it's only part of the application. Does that make sense? Like that. He's thrown out sambandha, basically. He's just senses and sense objects. That's all he's dealing with. Right? And then your abhideya is that you're going to apply the sense and the sense objects according to time, place, and circumstance, according to what's right and wrong. Right? And in doing this, you're naturally going to cooperate with others and help them. And then your ideas, you'll be happy. Right? Very, very narrow. Do we appreciate how narrow this is? Like that. So it'll immediately, you know, would be thrown. How can this be a doctrine? Right? It's not broad enough. It automatically is thrown out because it doesn't deal with the Lord. It's atheistic. But besides that, then with that, it's even a very narrow presentation. You know, so he's pointing out that even the Indian materialists, you know, philosophers have more developed than this. Right? So it just would be thrown out. So ultimately, if you throw out everything but the Vedic ones, and then the Vedic ones, you go through them and then find out that the only thing actually that functions is the constitutional. Does that make sense?
One, in the name of scientific abridgment of fundamental principles, the materials have attributed universal aboriginality to the matter and engaged in the unification of all that exists. But this is highly erroneous, because if matter is accepted as the origin, the external existence of various atoms, eternality of void, inconceivable relationship between matter and void, the eternity of the potency, nature, and the activities of the atoms have to be accepted. Without that, the universal creation becomes an impossibility. In this way, the fundamental principle becomes innumerable instead of unification. That is the entity of time that also cannot be understood. In this way, the fundamental conception of materialist becomes nothing more than a childish prank.
Means if their materialism means it's going to be taking, it's called materialism because it takes material energy as the source of everything. But the material energy is the source of everything, then your difficulty will be coming is that there is the matter itself, and then there is the formless. You have to accept that there's a formless that it's based on. Otherwise, how does it manifest? Right? The matter isn't created. The element of the formless is the concept behind why matter is being transformed. Does that make sense? You have a piece of wood because of your concept of a piece of furniture that can hold things. Right? So the Adhara Shakti, that aspect of it, turns this block of wood into some shelves. Right? So you're always going to have that the matter itself isn't actually the cause of the variety in matter. Right? So then you're going to create, so it doesn't get unified. They're thinking they're bringing everything together, unifying, so it's all very sentimental, even though they claim to be intellectual, very sentimental. Does this make sense? Yeah. Eternity of the potency means if this is what's the supreme, then why is it temporary? Right? So that means is something is in one form and then it comes and falls apart and then it is put back together in another form. You know what I'm saying? So the nature itself is eternal, but the forms that it goes through are constantly changing. So that would also break down, you know, this thing that how it's because it is.
Yeah, the eternality of it, then, like that. So
then there's a higher purpose or something, because they're saying there's nothing beyond this. Does that make sense? Yes? No?
So then, two, materialism is completely unusual and unscientific. Usually the nature or the quality is keen on its own cause. It is quite unreasonable to hold a material nature as eternal by denying the underlying sentence. Cause and effect are the nature of the mundane world. If this usual feature is denied, the material world becomes devoid of its nature. It is a scientific fact that matter is controlled and influenced by this sentience. Oh, I see here. Sentience is the soul. There's these unusual words.
Yeah, in other words, if you're leaving the soul out of it, because otherwise, why is the material nature even happening the way it does, except for because the soul is present? When the soul's not present, then it carries on in a different way. So either way, as the one before, is it carries on in its own way without man, or if man's there, it's because of the nature of the soul. Does that make sense? So, because the soul is present, so they're dealing with just atoms, because atoms is the basis of everything. You know, that they're dealing here. Same time as they're dealing with feelings and good and bad, which are not atoms. You know? So it's very, that's why it says here, a childish prank. It doesn't actually, it's not very, not very consistent.
Three. Naturally, the sentience, or the soul, is a superior and higher principle. It is only a stupid affair to imagine it to be controlled by the matter. Professor Ferris has elaborately discussed about this topic.
Was that a book that he made on the wheel or something? Something? I'm just wondering, where is he discussing this? Okay, so then he's saying the soul is superior to matter. It's not that the soul is controlled by matter. The soul is controlling matter, not the other way around. Does that make sense? So that then makes all this not work very well. Okay, so that's the third point. We'll stop here and we'll continue. He gives another eight. He gives up to 8 points on it. Okay, so then we'll continue. Today is what? Monday. Continue tomorrow. Okay, so we made it through peacefully.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prenanandi.